Watu from Baylor will be describing the use of the Zernike phase plate for tomography applications.
Good. Thanks for the organizers in putting me to address our experience in the Zernike phase plate. Our lab has been supported by the P41 mechanism, similar to what is being supported here in Scripps. So our interest is to develop the different types of methodologies for variety of specimens, particularly very difficult specimen like cellular specimen and heterogeneous specimens. And so I actually did read very carefully the assignment from Clint and Bridget and Ron. So here were the five questions they posed. And when I was putting my slide together, I said, oh, what am I going to talk? But I find them so useful just to follow what they asked me to do. So that's what I decided to just follow, answer one question at a time. So first, I'd like to introduce the system that we have in this Zernike phase contrast microscope. In fact, Danielle's early work that inspired me to look into that, I think that I need to give a lot of credit to Danielle and also Nagayama. So initially, it was implemented in the Joe 200 kilovolt Yechang microscope. It has an in column energy filter. And in our current configuration in Texas, we actually have a Gaten 4K camera as well as a DE camera. So there are two components, modifications needed to implement this Zernike phase contrast optics. First is around the optics in the specimen area, and second part is where you put the phase plate, which is the side part in the microscope. So first, I'd like to illustrate where the phase plate is located. It's similar to what Danielle talked about. And this is a ray diagram, and this is a schematic diagram. It's where your specimen is covered by the cold finger. And the phase plate just right below it, just above the objective apertures. And so in this particular phase plate, we have worked with the Joe to develop a mechanism that you can make a airlock types of insertion of the phase plate around in this side part, just like changing the specimen. Instead of breaking down the column, put the phase plate in, but you just insert the phase plate through an airlock system. And so this is how it looks schematically. So this is look like a specimen holder rod, and at the tips of it, it holds a called phase plate bray, in which it has 25 face plates. Each face plate is a thin carbon film, something in between 200 and 250 angstrom thick carbon film, and with a hole in the middle. So a blow-up of this is an image of such a face plate. So in practice, one has to look for one of the best face plates to do the imaging. Now, the principle of the phase plate, because it's located at the focal plane of the objective lens, so it has an effect on the so-called transfer function of the Yechang microscope. In the conventional Yechang microscopes, when you do a Fourier transform of an image, it's being modulated by a sinusoidal function. It's a sine function, including the defocus, astigmatisms, and aberration. Of the spherical aberration of objective lens. So in general, we all of us took pictures at highly defocused setting in such a way we can enhance the contrast at the low frequency information so you can actually see the particle. I mean, a while ago, an hour ago, we talked about what defocus we use. So the smaller the particle, the smaller defocus we use. So when it's a sine function dependent, so when sine equal to zero is zero. So as a result, all the low frequency informations in general are much, much reduced because of the sine functions. However, in this phase plate setup, What had this to do with a hole in the middle, which is at the focal plane of the lens? You make a pi over 2 phase shift, so a sine over a pi over 2 shift, it becomes a cosine wave. So this the Sanger function become a cosine wave. So as a result of this, instead of making very close our focus setting to take images for a phase space setting, you use a close to focus. So your first zero may be at the Schur limit. It can go all the way to really high resolution. So these are typical images, conventional images of particle, and this is what with this pi over 2 Schrödinger phase contrast image. You can see a typical image of this as a Fresnel fringes and also the reverse contrast. So it's so when you look at the phase the Schrödinger phase play images, they don't look exactly like what you used to. So it has a fringes because you have a hole in the middle of the carbon film. That what Daniel talked about, that is a kind of annoying aspect. Whereas in this voltage phase play, you eliminate that substantially. So with that, so I start answer the first questions. What are the advantages using phase space for recording tomographic data? So in order to do so, I just want to show you a couple examples. One is a single particle example doing tomography. Another is a cellular samples. So here is a phase particle called epsilon 15. Phase particle epsilon 15 is a DNA containing phage. It has double strand DNA inside, and it has a coprotein, and it has 12 vertices. In one of the 12 vertices, actually have a tail with which it anchored to the cell surface to invade the host. So here is a typical ICE embedded images of that in a tomogram. And so if you look at different sections through the tomogram, you will see the phase particle shows up. You can see actually this particle is really, really high contrast. And in fact, some of them you can actually see the tail quite clearly in one of the vertices like here, and so on and so forth. And so with just one tomogram, we can do the reconstructions. And so the result of that is a subtomogram averaging as what John talked about yesterday, which in this case we use only 18 particles in one tomogram, and we were able to get these 30 angstrom resolutions. And I just want to point out, this has no symmetry assumed. We just took one set of tomogram and then aligned and 80 particle in doing the reconstruction. So I think in here we're seeing not only the icosahedral shell, but there are 6 density we call tail fiber and also a long tail in the middle in one of the 12 vertices. So I think that shows that with such a high contrast, it's very easy to figure out where the tail is in one of the 12 vertices and allow us to align that very, very quickly. Just one afternoon experiment when everything works. Now the next example I want to show you is what happened when the phage begin to infect a bacteria, because that is where the biology begins. So this is another phage. It's called cyanophage, as the name called CYN5. Indeed, this is a phase space images individual particles, and in this particular phage is very unique because it has a tail, but it also has a horn on the opposite side of the vertex. And so these are the 6 different examples of this biochemically purified phage CYN5. So we use this CYN5 phage and infect the bacteria host, which is a cyanobacteria. And so here's a image of a single shot of image. This is recorded with a conventional cryo-EM, and on the right with this phase pair, as you can see, the internal image contrast would show up quite readily. So this turned out to be the same specimen area. So again, we can use these types of specimen and do the tomography. And so this is a typical two series of one of these bacteria at the very early stage of the infections. So here, I'm showing you a tomogram of this bacteria, which has been wait for a little while after the phage infection. So as a result, you can imagine the DNA has been deposited into the bacteria, and it has been replicated and transcribed and then make new phages. So in here, this particular movie I'm going to show you represent one example of this bacteria has been infected by the phage for a little longer time. And so what I'm showing you is again, going through section by section in this tomogram. And now this one is at the late stage. So as a result of that, the cell is no longer round, as you saw in the previous examples. And at the same time, you do see a lot of features inside the cell. And you do see here is the cell membrane, and this is another membranous material. And then there are some phage-like looking particles. It has about the right size. And there are also some phages outside, which has emptied out its DNA already. And so as I pan through it, though, you can see really a lot of features. This we interpret as ribosome. I mean, no matter what, ribosome everywhere in the cell, either know you like it or not. So in here, after we get this kind of tomogram, the first task is to do the annotation. So in this case, we do a human annotations of that. But before we do that, I'd like to show you another way of displaying these kinds of 3D volume we call volume rendering. So in other words, every pixel is being displayed in this case. And so here, the ribosome, polyribosome is leaking out in this corner right here because the cell is at the early stage of infection. The cell actually begins to lyse. And so in here, we annotated in each of the features which we think we know. And this, of course, this is cell membrane outside. And then this is a photosynthetic bacteria, so the follicle membrane in green, which is kind of parallel to the cell membrane. And then there are other really big particle like in blue. And in fact, this is definitely biggest in terms of diameter than the phage. It's about 1,000 angstrom big in diameter. And we interpret it as carboxysome, which contain the Rubisco enzyme that fix the carbon dioxide in the photosynthetic reactions. And then the other is all these, couldn't bother annotating, is the ribosome, and then we have one vesicle. And then the red ones are the infecting phages outside. You see this one, actually, you can see the tail are inserting in here. The purple one are the newly synthesized phage particle. So as you see in here, when we zoom in one of the area, we do see that's actually this looks like another density sticking on the opposite end. So I think that is really interesting in this particular case here. Like in here, it looks like the horn are sticking out in the opposite end and the tail are inserting in the periplasmid. So I think that is a really good visual evidence to show you that the tail is being used as a tail, like all the phages. The horn, we don't know what it does yet, but it's pointing at the opposite end. And so now in these types of tomogram, there's a lot of information you can mine. Data mining is a mind-boggling process. So in this particular example, we are drilling on the phages. We are interested exactly how the phages are being assembled. So in here, we do not only one experiment, we do multiple experiments in such a way we can have phages at no macrophage infection, early stage infection, intermediate and late stage. So we can annotate this and also can do the subtomogram averaging as John Briggs pointed out yesterday. And so after we did a lot of tomographic reconstruction and then extraction computationally of each particle, we were able to classify five types of particles. One is having density on both ends, another has only one end. We interpret this as the tail. Another has no tail, no horns. And the fourth one does look like somewhat empty, but it angularized. But the last type is circular and a smaller diameter. So I think from here, that allow us to make a hypothesis about the assembly process likely to be to form a particle like this, round and about 80 angstroms smaller than all the other particles without any DNA, but with scaffolding protein. And then the scaffolding protein helped the cell build, would exit out. And now, interestingly, we actually noted that their density in this vertex we interpret as terminates, because the biologists know there's ought to be a terminase which help the DNA to fragment into the particle. So we do see that, in fact, no one has any phage has been able to isolate these types of particle have the terminase alone. That suggests these types of particle probably a very transient or very labile in the cell. Once this is formed, and then the DNA will encapsulate very, very quickly, and subsequently tail add on, the torn is being added on the last. So that allow us in these kinds of subtomogram discovery to suggest a biogenesis pathway, how the particle are formed from one stage to the others. So I think that exemplifies how we can use these phage space to try to dissect a biological process in the cell. Now, I just want to point out, before we started on this phage space, we spent about 2 years in the conventional electron tomogram, and we extract particle, we try to do the most sophisticated extractions and subtomogram, and we've never been able to see something as clear as that. So I think from here, that I think we gave up all the 2 years work on the conventional electron tomography, that we just forget about that, and actually took about a year and a half to this work. So I think that example, the potential power, if we want to understand the molecular structure in the cell, I think that we represent that cryo-electron tomography, the phage space, is one of the avenues. And so the next questions that I was asked to address is, do they improve resolution and or signal noise ratio? I think Danielle's pointed out where clearly the phage space at the moment can do only around 8 or 9 angstrom resolution. I just want to point out some of the work we did with Danielle some years ago. Again, with this, back to the epsilon again. And in this case, instead of doing icosahedral reconstruction like you saw over and over again, well, you didn't see it this time, actually. Nobody saw any virus, but except Jim. But it's figure out. So we do completely no symmetry assumptions imposed in the reconstruction. We call symmetry-free. And we were able to get 13 angstroms. Just for a reference, prior to this work, we actually did this single-particle conventional cryo-EM. We used something like 25,000 particles to do this type of reconstruction, and that was published a couple years before this. And so, but in here, we use only 1/4 of the numbers to get basically the same answer. On top, in fact, we get these 13 angstrom versus 20 angstrom with 20,000 particles some years ago. So I think that's another way of asking not just the matter resolution, but how quickly you can solve a problem like this. In other words, to look at non-icosahedral component in an icosahedral virus. Yesterday, somebody points out the difficult thing is the kind of quasi-symmetric. I think this represents probably the most difficult. Now, people keep telling me asymmetric particle is the most difficult. I'm not sure that's the case. I think most difficult is they're highly symmetrical because they have all the other 60 copies in the cell that would dominate the signal. So in other words, if you want to find that, it's actually it's not too easy. And I think using these types of approach would allow us to get the structure more quickly. And then now the question is, are there limits on the resolution that can be attained? So I want to show you another example similar to what Daniel did. And again, this, if we assume the symmetry, get rid of the tail, we can actually get this 9-angstrom resolution quite readily. We had the same experience as what he pointed out. We didn't need to worry about the correction and transfer function around 11 or 12 angstrom. But anything beyond that, we need to fix the CTF again. I think that testified the current stage of difficulty in imaging specimen like this. It's very hard to get in focus, even though you really want in focus, but there's no easy way of getting it accurately. So still, we need to do the CTA correction. And lastly, I think I want to just point out about the phase shift issue about pi over 2. So I just want to be sure that pi over 2 is actually correct, even though the physics say so. So what we did is use the bacterial dopsin, which the atomic structure was well known. So we did this glucose-embedded bacterial dopsin, and we took images, and then here is the so-called IQ plot, and we can do all the amplitude and phases out to 8-angstrom resolution. And we compare the phase value that in Richard Henderson's papers, and I think on an average, the phase error differences between what we solve here and what probably is around 10 degrees. So that means this phase shift is really, really true. And in fact, in the projection, we see all these 7-alpha helices. I think at that time when we plot out this B factor, because we have the Yerchon diffraction pattern of bacterial dopsin, we can actually very accurately to determine this B factor is terrible compared to what you have heard in the last few days. Instead of 100 B factor in these situations, it's around 860. So I think we have a bit long way to go in getting this to a better prepare. So last question is that how much money and effort is required? Actually, I'm not sure how much money it takes, but probably compared to what I heard here, with all you so rich, probably doesn't matter. But the effort is the issue. So I just want to share with you about the example of the tomogram I talk about. We use about 300 phase-based hosts and about 15 braids. And then we did all manual corrections initially. Now we actually implement the serial EM. One of the challenges in the phase bay when we collect the data 2 years ago is the phase bay did not last very long. So in other words, around that 25 holes, a phase bay, you need to search one. And in the middle of two series, you find that actually the phase bay die. So you need to find another one, or your tomogram will be had to abort it. And so so I think this, we managed to have total 103 subtomogram, and 60% of them are good, and 40% are no good. So which might be not bad, but it took quite a bit of time. So I think that is the effort, at least a couple of years ago, that is the case. So now I actually recently have an experience in FEI trying the voltage phase space, and I would say that was a day and night. It's much easier to use. Now the question is does it have the same contrast or not? I think we can discuss later on about that. I'm not absolutely conclusive. At least from the visual inspection, the contrast is not as high as the Sonicki. I don't know if Daniel will agree with that or not. So I think the last question is, should we all get one? I think eventually, yes. And I think what is needed to develop today or tomorrow are the following. We need to have more robust Sonicki phase plates. It sounds pretty simple to have a hole with a carbon film. So I think one of the bigger challenges is actually with with the charging problem. I think in the latest batch of the face plate we are getting, and we're actually fabricating our own face plates as well, pretty encouraging. I think it seemed to be better than used to be. So I think that is an encouraging sign. And then the other thing is about the optics. I didn't have time to go into that. I think it may bore most of you. But I think in order to get the faceplate work properly, you need to be so-called on-plan condition. You have the very parallel beam. And so far, we outfit the faceplate in a 10-year-old used microscope in my case. So the optical arrangement is really suboptimum. So I think if one need to design it, there are plenty of room. It's pretty straightforward what kind of optics need to be done. But the manufacturer just need to listen. That is a joke. So I think they need to be optimized, because right now we put the faceplate in the objective lens aperture area. There's options you actually can put in the selective area aperture that is actually quite promising in our preliminary data. We need to more optimize the data. And finally, we like to incorporate with the direct detection to enhance the contrast further. And I think I'll, Bob, thank you. No, that's fine.